Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 4th of April. Very nice to have you with us. And let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll tell you how you can take part. People still screw it up, but we'll give you the absolutely right email address, and you can write to us, and we'll see
what you have to say.
No, they don't care. They just
write the mail. They write the roundtable.
I'm going to give you the place, and then you get mad. So that's what happens. They get mad because you don't read the letter, and you tell them, well, you have to send it here. If we're going to read it or even see it for that matter. So, it's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we welcome you to our program. Let me introduce the panel. Alan Chartok is here in studio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Very nice to have you.
And very nice to be here.
Rosemary Romeo, director of the journalism program at the University of Albany, is here as well. Good morning.
I am. Hello.
Hello. And Mike Spain is our regular, our Tuesday regular. And you say, oh, I've heard Mike on days other than Tuesday. Yeah, that's because he's so nice and comes in whenever we ask him to. And so, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to see all of you in the studio together.
And he's all dressed out. You know, you see that? He's got a really lovely tie on, white shirt.
He's beginning to look
more and more like Rex all the time.
He always has the shirt and tie, but not usually the jacket.
Well, you know, every once in a while, you just got to...
Oh, come on. There's something up. There's a meeting or something like that. Yeah.
You have a meeting with the Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor.
No, I would love to hear Sonia Sotomayor
speak. Oh, I'm going to
speak.
this afternoon.
I've heard her speak. Yeah, it's a tremendous story of a Hispanic kid, of Puerto Rican descent who grew up in the Bronx, and they told her, you know, oh, come on, you know, what are you reaching for? And she goes to Princeton and goes on and then gets a law degree, mm-hmm. and now she's a U.S. Supreme Court justice, the third woman on the court,
right.
Yeah, first Hispanic.
Right. Yeah.
She'll be at both Albany Law School and the University of Albany.
Sage College.
The giving over in Troy is giving
an honorary degree.
Yeah,
some great stuff going on.
And she's going to talk about her book tonight, I think, at UAlbany.
Yes. Yeah. Just a general conversation. Paul will be with her. Paul Grondahl will be with her. So
I'm still hoping that she'll have like a Ruth Bader Ginsburg outburst against Trump.
I don't think so. She's very measured.
I know. I can still hope.
Except Ruth Bader Ginsburg when she spoke about Trump.
She kind of went crazy that one time.
All right. Well, good morning and welcome. And we again remind you, panel@wamc.org. Let us go to the, while we're talking about the Supreme Court, why should we not begin with the Democrats' vow to filibuster the Gorsuch nomination, which will ensure a bitter fight. And not only that, pretty much a change for the U.S. Senate forever, right? Senate Democrats on Monday secured the votes necessary to filibuster the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch. It is really setting up a bitter confrontation this week that threatens to further unravel a chamber where bipartisanship and decorum have eroded for years. Who's responsible for that?
Well, we know it's Mitch McConnell's responsible for that. No two ways about it. He stood up. He would not give an up or down vote, the very thing they're screaming about now, to Garland when Obama nominated him. And now they have unmitigated chutzpah to say, how can you deny him an up or down vote? It's disgusting.
Right. But this is political payback then. That's all.
So what?
Okay, just call it what it is. It isn't really because Gorsuch is so objectionable. I mean, he is a conservative judge picked by conservatives who may, be a lot like Antonin Scalia was.
Yeah.
But is that a reason to reject him?
You bet it is.
Oh, okay. You want it both ways.
No, I don't want it both ways. I'm just telling you right now that this guy's going to be on the court for 40 years, right? Could be 40 years.
Yeah, he's very healthy. He's an outdoorsman.
He's a young man. Be on for 40 years. The whole future history of the United States will be because they wouldn't do the right thing and follow the Constitution and let Garland face the senators, many Republicans of whom would have had to vote for him because he's an outstanding judge. Okay, your kid. Somebody comes up to your kid in the schoolyard and punches him every day, and you say, "Oh well, we have to learn to live with people punching you in the face."
Here's the difference: those what? Kids grow up, and everything returns to normal.
No,
what's happening today in the Senate or this week in the Senate is going to change not just the vote.
Exactly.
Gorsuch. No. It's going to change the Supreme Court in ways we can't even think of yet.
That's what I was trying
to say. We're going to eliminate. I'm against you. Don't think we're agreeing. I'm not.
Wait a second. You're against
me? I am opposed to what you're saying. Ruth Marcus has an amazing column in the Washington Post today that puts the stakes in. It's a great column. I recommend it. And what's happening is the Republicans, out of might and arrogance and this lack of compromise that we have anymore, are going to go nuclear.
Yeah,
and when that happens, all future Supreme Court justices will be picked by a simple majority. And right now, Republicans hold that simple majority. So when the next opening comes, which won't make it 5-4, we've lived with that most of our lives, but we'll make it 6-3. Trump, remember who's in the office, who's in the White House, will pick the most extreme. He could put Jared Kushner in.
Excuse me.
He could put Melania in.
Excuse me.
Anybody, and he will get it through.
Excuse me. You could not be more wrong about this. You and Mortimer Zuckerman, whom I've never had any respect for, but who runs they have a big editorial in Daily News, you know, on your side today. And I'll tell you why. Because effectively, they already have changed it. It's not as if they're going to change it now. He says, either you do it our way, says McConnell, or we're going to put them in using the nuclear option. So as far as I'm concerned, the nuclear option has arrived.
I agree with that. I am not saying the Democrats are wrong to do this. I'm saying that we as Americans should be said we are losing something really important in this vote. I think Gorsuch will be a terrible Supreme Court justice. I think he's completely corporate, believes more in companies than in human beings, forget his women's record. However, he will be another Scalia on the court. It's the next one I worry about. And I understood some people blame Harry Reid, saying he should never have let the 60-40 vote disappear with
the district court.
But had he not done that, there would have been vacancies. The Republicans.
Dozens of vacancies.
And it's more than just the Republicans. Let's go back to the electorate that demands that its Tea Party candidates not compromise. That's what our government has been based on, is that parties talking together. There's no talking together anymore. There's like our way or obstructionism. Now look at the position we're in.
Listen, Rosemary.
You sound like my granddaughter.
I don't agree with you because you say, well, it's the next one I'm worried about. I'm worried about this one. And I'll tell you why. Because it's going to be an extra vote for the Republicans, and they will control the court. And so everything you're worried about, Rosemary, is going to happen because of this one, not the next one.
Well, we've had a 5-4 vote. We had Scalia, who's not just an arch conservative the way Gorsuch is, but was, you know, quite persuasive in bringing other people on the court around to his way of thinking, too. And we survived that.
Yes, and by the way,
there have been some actually good decisions by the court under Scalia.
By the way, the Times did an analysis.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which was, where does Gorsuch sit
to
the left or the right of Scalia? To the right of Scalia.
Yeah. But you consider that. If he's way to the right of Scalia, how would he rule, for example, on the emoluments clause, if it ever got to that?
Sure.
He can't rule for Trump.
No.
He would be against him. So, you know, you can't just go with that strict. I disagree with him that there's no such thing as a Democrat or a Republican judge. That's crazy thinking.
That's crazy talk.
But the difference is when you're arguing philosophy and law, which they do in that court, are sometimes surprising.
No, that's
right.
True. And we don't, I'm sorry, Mike, but we don't even know whether this guy is stung. I mean, the Democrats are basically united here, and he may be looking for one to show his independence, and it may be the emoluments clause.
Yeah, I mean, he is quite a strict originalist, and there's really very few ways to read it other than that Trump is wrong right now.
But don't you think this is more about Democrat strategy?
Yes.
I mean, it's inevitable that Gorsuch is going to join the Supreme Court. And do they want to spend this now, you know, spend the little political capital they have and force the GOP into this using the nuclear option and ending the filibuster option? And that could spread to everything, you know, and eventually it could just become a simple majority partisan branch of government, or, you know,
like the House of Representatives.
Like the House of Representatives.
Yeah. It already
the Senate.
Well, it's not quite.
I see Alan's point. You know, it's like, okay, what's the difference if they try to stave off Gorsuch and fail, or wait until the next time when I think it really will make a horrible difference, and they try then and fail? Because that could also happen.
One thing to note, you know, there is, you know, some feeling among Democrats, it might be a pie in the sky, that Trump won't be around that long. And if they can, you know, dig in right now and dig in the next time, or the, you know, whoever would be the next one to retire holds off, that it won't be Trump they're dealing with. Of course, they'd be dealing with Mike Pence, and he might pick somebody even more to the right of Gorsuch.
That's right.
I have to say that we've gotten a note from Ellen, who writes to us every once in a while, who says, Sonia Sotomayor is the fourth woman to be appointed to the Supreme Court. Fourth, not the third.
I apologize.
But she makes the point, Sandra Day O'Connor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, and Sonia.
Kagan.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sonia,
she was before.
But, says Ellen, she's the third woman currently on the court.
Yes.
That's where this third thing comes from.
My bad.
No, all our bad. Yeah.
Thank you for the correction.
We wouldn't let you
Everyone
float out there.
Everyone needs an editor.
We wouldn't let you float out there all alone.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue. We'll get to some more letters and talk some more about all this stuff. We'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Gear Village, a senior community where one can age in a supportive environment at all stages of life. GearVillage.com for information. Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York. Offering custom framing and local art in the Capital Region, open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting their Earth Day event with volunteer conservation projects for children, adults, and community groups, April 2nd from 9 to noon, albanypinebush.org. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, featuring dahlia and gladiola bulbs, houseplants, pansies, lilies, violas, orchids, and eclectic gardening gear, wardsnursery.com. And Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio, forthillautobody.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion a few minutes before our news break. And we have some more letters to get to, and we'll do that right now.
Okay. But I'm trying to eat a lot of protein. And I'm eating, you know, nuts.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, almonds.
Oh, so you get them stuck in your throat.
Exactly.
Great. Well.
Okay, Kathy says.
Sounds good.
Folks eat lots of fake folksy, done just to burn up the clock. Disingenuous. Lied to Franken about his political activity. Completely unnecessary. Who cares about his politics? So why lie? He lied. Does he understand the law? Yes, but he's a disingenuous liar. And that's from Catherine. Good morning, panel. Would the nuclear option be forever? Could a new Senate leader change the rules yet again?
Yes.
The answer is yes, of course.
Yep.
The Senate is quite the undemocratic institution, second only to the House.
That's an interesting prospect. I mean, if things go the way they're going, Democrats could pick up the Senate, and it's a reach, but if they pick it up, that would be Chuck Schumer's, you know, noble act. It would be to restore the filibuster and honor the notion of needing at least 60 votes for anything to pass, and that would be an interesting symbolic gesture of unity that could bring them back together.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Mike, and that's why we love you, because you're the nicest guy in the entire world. It just happens you're wrong.
I think that makes all three of us this morning.
Yeah,
yeah, that was quick. It's only 14 minutes in.
You are the only one right this morning.
That's why I like to come here.
Should we just leave and you can just take? Oh no, wait. He would say yes to that.
I think Schumer would love the opportunity to be the Senate Majority Leader, where he may or may not do that.
Well, it all depends whether you think humanity-wise the glass is half full or half empty.
Right.
To me, it's not so good. All right. So says somebody here. I like it when they put a name on it, you know. This issue can be resolved with term limits for the justices. Please discuss. You would need an amendment to do that. Exactly, and it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, forget it. But thank you for that. And that's all I got.
Okay, let's go to other issues making news, and we'll move on from the Supreme Court issue. Well, you know what? Because we only have about 4 or 5 minutes, Mike, why don't we talk a little bit about the state budget and where we are with that? And
well, as WAMC and the Times Union and everybody has been reporting, lawmakers failed to come to a full budget agreement by the April 1st deadline. So the governor proposed basically what amounts to a 2-month extension of the current budget, which lets state government operate. The state comptroller says that all the state employees will be paid. Some of them might actually be paid a little late.
Why is that? I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, because the appropriation, when you had to start processing their pay period, some pay periods were beginning already, but they'll be paid.
What Tom said, we're doing our best to make sure that they get paid. That doesn't mean they're getting paid. It means we're doing
paid
our best.
Paid on time. I think there's very little doubt that they'll get paid. They may be delayed in some cases. But
wait, this could be my paycheck.
By the way,
oh my gosh.
That's right. You're a state employee at the University at Albany.
There was a while they were giving out, remember one time they were giving out scrip.
Scrip, right. And which was script. Like a check, but it really wasn't.
You could
wasn't.
Bring the scrip to the bank, and the bank would make it into money for you.
Yeah, that was a weird period. But anyway,
an IOU,
it's not an unusual situation. I mean, during the Pataki administration and the previous
Mario Cuomo
administration, it would be up to the middle of June sometimes, even into July, I think, on some years. But yeah. But this does mess up a lot of things. You know, local school districts don't know how much money they're going to get. The city of Albany is hanging on $12.5 million infusion of money that they get every year, and they're hoping to get it. It's not part of this continuation of the budget, and they're going to have to start chopping programs. They're going to have to continue and expand their hiring freeze to cover the summer help, et cetera, et cetera. So everyone's nervous. But one of the reasons it broke down was the issue of raise the age, and that is the bill that Assembly Speaker Hastie feels very strongly about, and that is extending to 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds the same options that courts have with people below 16 to treat them as juvenile offenders and come up with alternative ways to, you know, bring their families in, bring in social workers, et cetera, and help them get their lives straightened out. Yes, Alan.
Thank you. I raised my hand to be recognized, and you did. I appreciate that very much, Mike. Mm. Two things.
One minute before the break.
I think you have it half right. I think the reason this thing didn't pass.
You went from completely wrong to half right. Yeah, good
luck
you.
Get in there.
I think you have it half right. Because you were right to raise. And I said, okay, that's right. And then you said the age on the prison stuff. No, raise. They didn't get their raises, and they are furious with Andrew. And anyway, they could put it to him, they were going to do. And I think this is one way. The second issue, and real fast, has to do with the federal government. And there's so much money that is at stake here that's coming from the feds. They don't know what to do about that, so they gotta wait and see.
Well, I stand partly corrected. whether the legislators who haven't had a raise since the 1990s get a raise.
That's what they deserve.
That's a big issue, and it doesn't seem imminent.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation and talk about many more things Trumpian. Channel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So we took some time to what?
We have a breaking news. We have breaking news.
Yeah. So
I have been vindicated.
We have breaking news.
That's true. I checked. We checked the Google machine here a moment ago, and so Mike had made the statement that Justice Sotomayor was the third woman named to the Supreme Court. She was named to the Supreme Court in August of 2009. We were then corrected by a listener who said that she was the fourth justice because we were forgetting Elena Kagan. However, Elena Kagan was actually nominated a year later on August 7th, 2010. So that means that you were correct that, yes, Justice Sotomayor.
But.
Sonia Sotomayor.
But.
Was the third justice.
There's a but.
There's a but. We have to give credit to Donna with two N's.
Yes.
Who was the one who pointed this out to us.
Yes. Well, we thank Donna.
Thank you, Donna.
All right.
Okay.
Do you want to go to more letters?
If you like, if that's what you want.
Sure.
You're certainly the boss around here, and I'll do whatever you tell me, and I mean that.
That's very clear. Yes, okay. Go ahead.
Sally says, perhaps Dems could get in the Senate in 18 and fight the SCOTUS nominations to make them even more reasonable. Yeah, well, the Dems are going to have a hell of a problem keeping what they've got right now in the United States Senate because they have to defend a lot more seats. Defend is the key word, than the Republicans do. So that's important. Okay, so Nancy says, my son graduated in 88, Columbia 88, with Gorsuch. Gorsuch ran for school council and lost. You take your victory, you get them. The students knew something that the Senate Republicans don't. And that's,
wow, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. That's yeah. Holding a long grudge, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 He wasn't worth it then. He isn't worth it
now.
Well,
there were questions about how often he volunteered and did pro bono work while at Harvard Law School. But, you know, like I said, let that go.
Yeah, okay. Okay. R. Roger says, okay. Dumb. I don't understand the Dems' strategy here. They were going to lose this one. They knew it. And Gorsuch keeps the court balance the same as when Scalia was in. Oh, brother. The next one is an important one. The Dems should have used this as an opportunity to extract a deal, something they wanted. I just don't get their strategy. They're in a hole, and they keep digging. I keep trying to tell everybody that they're going to have the deciding vote on Gorsuch. Therefore, it doesn't matter about the next one. They're already going to be ahead. The Republicans are already going to be ahead. And the idea of the next one is the important one is wrong. It's just, I hate to say it, Roger, you're just wrong. Don't you get it? Don't you see? No, Rosemary's.
It's just not in the studio that we're wrong. It's the entire listenership.
Rosemary's giving me the look.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay.
If only this was television.
Okay. It is television. You can see
that's
this.
That's true.
Over here. Yeah. Okay, Christina says, Gorsuch is highly qualified and should be confirmed. When the Repubs did to Garland, what the Repubs did to Garland last year was wrong, but it's an emotional error to vote against him. Now the Democrats are acting as childish as the Republicans. Well, I certainly don't agree with that.
You know, I do disagree in that. Lost in this whole thing about the nuclear vote is his qualifications. I think there are valid reasons not to vote for him. And it has to do not with his being conservative, but with his being so pro-corporation. It's scary. The whole idea of the Supreme Court, I think, is to protect human rights. And we well may be losing that.
Well, I think you're right about that. And I think the guy's a decent guy. I watched the hearings almost in their entirety. I thought I was impressed with his persona, with his personality and what he was saying there. Although he did lose for student council president in the in Columbia University.
Yeah, but so what? Merrick Garland had all of that too. He couldn't even get, you know, a hearing. He
that
couldn't even
is
get
my point.
Couldn't even get polite treatment.
Know, but,
it means
but let
nothing.
Let me just ask you, do two wrongs make a right?
Oh God.
Oh
here
please.
We go.
Okay. Okay, so somebody comes up to you and punches you in the face. So, you know, or punches your kid in the face, that makes it even a little bit more explicit. And says, I'll do that anytime I want to. In the meantime, you guys can play the little Lord Fauntleroy. See what I mean?
This is not a valid comparison.
Yeah. There is a
Why
point
not?
Where you have to stand up. And if the Democrats have acquiesced and they were gracious and they said, well, we will let you have this one and you know, gave their vote. And most of them voted and got it out on the floor. And then they passed, you know, they approved Gorsuch as Supreme Court justice. It could have been a magnanimous effort to show unity and try to bridge the gap that has existed, or it could look just like a little wimp who caved in and is going to get punched the next time and the next time and the next time. I mean,
right.
You know, and you can look at it both ways.
No, there's only one way to look at this. And that's
Pow.
Right. Right. And that's
touch my kid and you're dead.
And that's the difference between you and
silly.
Me.
Yeah, that I think that's silly. You know, when kids are involved, it's just a whole different argument. Because you're talking about human biology. It's just different. This whole thing makes me feel really sorry for Chuck Schumer, who has a really intelligent man who cares about our government.
Right.
And he has to figure out what's the right thing to do. And as we show right here, we can easily argue both sides, except for Alan, who's right. We can argue both sides of it. So what does he decide to do? Either way, he loses. And in neither case, does he have the charisma or the pull of Trump? Or even, for that matter, of McConnell.
Right.
So that's just an awful position.
Wait. Yeah. Chuck Schumer does not have the charisma of Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell has the charisma of a turtle.
Turtle.
Mitch McConnell,
in fact, that's my
Mitch
nickname for him, the turtle.
Mitch McConnell has shaped this country for the next the next generation.
I think he has the persona of Howdy Doody.
I don't know. He got that hot professional wife. He's got control of the U.S. Senate and of the U.S. government. There's something there.
And
I don't get it. I'm not personally susceptible to it, but he is an amazing politician.
And he is, and he has no limits. That's the thing that really bothers me.
And going back to the Democrat strategy, it is important to note that John McCain, Ted Cruz, and others had said no matter who Hillary Clinton nominates for the Supreme Court, we're going to fight it for 8 years if she gets reelected. We're not going to let her have it.
Exactly.
You know, and that kind of resolute, they can get away with saying it. And they don't have to now live for it.
And that's my bully analogy. Yeah. That's exactly right, Michael. You're coming around to the right side on this now.
The problem, however, is that when he said that, he was expecting not to be in the incredible control that he is now with all three branches of government under his control. So it is not just a bully. It's a bully who's been empowered by the American people to do whatever they want. They don't even have to bully right now. They can just straight vote and they're going to get their way. That's what Chuck Schumer is really doing.
They can't do a straight vote if there's a filibuster.
Well, they can eliminate the filibuster for 15 minutes.
Right,
they just eliminate the filibuster, take the, quote, nuclear option, and then it just deteriorates into a simple majority and there goes any compromise.
Here you go.
Right.
$78,333. That is the first quarter salary payment for the President of the United States. He announced yesterday he will be donating that amount to the National Park Service.
What a jerk. Come on. How much did he take out of his proposed budget? It's billion, over a billion.
$1.5 billion.
From the Interior Department.
That's
which
his proposal,
course,
that they take $1.5 billion out of the Department.
I'm fooled. Oh, I'm really blinded by that. How much are we spending on his security? We're not giving, he's not taking a salary, but he sure as heck is taking the security payments, which the Secret Service just asked for $60 million to pay for him going to Mar-a-Lago. Oh, I think I'm getting white hot again.
I'm kidding. I just want to say I'm kidding. You know, he was at odds with the Department of Interior over their count of how many people attended his inauguration, and maybe this is a way to make up for having publicly insulted them.
Come on. Somebody was sitting around there in there.
He's required to take the salary. That's the thing. He can't just say,
because he said he wasn't going to take it.
Right. But he is required.
And they said, you have to take it.
And he said, I'm not going to take it until the year is over.
The end of the year. And then they said, well, we're going to come up with a charity. And then the charity to receive the money then became the National Park Service.
Wait a minute. Now, why can't he do it? I mean, we can eliminate the nuclear option, but he can't. They can't come up with some kind of way, a mechanism for him to forego a salary. I don't find that credible. Do you?
I'm sure it could be done.
Well, it would be nice if it did go in to pay a small, small amount of his security costs.
Right,
you know,
correct.
Just maybe to the New York City Police Department that spends a couple million dollars a month protecting Trump Tower. You know, it just...
I know this is some budget construct. It's like, you know, you can't spend money that's in the capital budget on operations. I get it. You know, all the bean counters like it all nice and neat. But the rules, and rules can be changed or broken or amended.
Letting him donate it is, you know, okay, as long as he donates it in a way that helps.
So, meanwhile, while that has happened, newly released records show that the trust agreement that Donald Trump used to put his adult sons in charge of his company allows him to draw money from it upon his request, illustrating that thin divide between the president and his private fortune. The filing, first reported by ProPublica, was found in this bundle of documents released last week by the GSA, says the General Services Administration, says that the trust that owns hundreds of Trump's businesses shall distribute net income or principal to Donald J. Trump at his request or whenever his son and a longtime employee, quote, deem appropriate. So, for example, if you are short $78,333 because you've given it to the National Park Service, you could draw that money out of this fund.
Sure. It's hard to imagine what he needs any money for because everything he does is
we're paying for it.
Is paid for.
35%.
What 35%?
Still support this. They're fooled by this. They think this is great.
And because someday they think they're going to have the same thing as the lottery. I said that the other day. They think someday they're going to win big, and they want the same privilege. Don't you see? Here's a letter from Ken.
Yes.
Who says, good morning. If all politics... Oh, he said, and in the name of the subject is white women Trump support. Good morning. If all politics are local, what's more local than the breakfast table where all too often women follow the lead of their idiotic husbands? Thanks, panel. Safe travels. And that's from Ken. But Ken.
Ken. Ken, I like this. Yeah, an enlightened male, there's nothing better.
But not in my house. In my house, I do not lead the opinion.
Yes.
Roselle does. And so this is just wrong.
No, it's wrong in your not ordinary household.
Why is it not so ordinary? You think that women don't
rule
the
roost? Look at the vote for Trump. Many women have asked this. Why did white women, college educated especially, vote for Donald Trump? It was not in their self-interest. He has not proven himself a friend in any way. Why did they support him? He's right. And that in the history of women voting, that has been the pattern that they followed their husband and father's lead.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break just before we do the new breaking news, and we were expecting this, I guess, but the NCAA lifted its ban on holding championship events in North Carolina since the state repealed the so-called bathroom bill. So the state got what they wanted in that regard, I guess.
Happy time for basketball lovers in North Carolina. Last night, their team, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, won the national championship. And now they can have NCAA-sanctioned events again in the state.
Just to point out that there are people who think that the agreement, the legislative agreement, was not sufficient.
I know that.
Oh, it was
gradual.
It also just shuts down the municipalities in North Carolina from making decisions on human rights that go even a half step further than the state has gone. Terrible.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to more news and more letters. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from The Spot 518, a weekly arts, entertainment, and cultural publication for the Capital Region, available online in newsstands and venues. TheSpot518.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. The Unitarian Universalist Congregations, in the Capital Region and beyond, where adults and children can worship and explore different religious traditions together. HudsonMohawkUU.org. Dr. Theda Patterson and Associates, providing dermatologic and medically focused skin care to the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, and surrounding areas since 1995. When it comes to skin, this practice is in. THETAPatterson.com. And Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, offering a household hazardous waste and pharmaceutical collection day in Kingston for all Ulster County residents on Saturday, April 22nd. UCRRA.org for more information and registration.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain join us this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. I want to move on to another topic. We just have two letters left from the batch, the last batch, if you will.
Yeah,
actual letters from actual listeners, and if they weren't, could Alan do that?
Namaste.
Namaste.
Who writes almost every day, says the only saving grace is that's a yoga term, right?
Is
that
it
I
is.
Remember that from my yoga days.
Yeah.
From your yoga days.
From my yoga days.
Sorry.
Oh my God. Listeners, that's Alan Chartok with an extra C.
Yeah, right. Because I'm not reading it without that C, and it's a one L in Alan. The only saving grace is that this Supreme Court has gone against two of his rulings. So maybe they will temper his opinions and it won't be so bad.
All right. Next.
Aye. Linda says, Gorsuch has shown himself to be such a right-wing corporation supporter in his decisions that I fear the whole structure of our government will never be able to be retrieved after this mess. We may not be able to recover through normal channels because of the corruption of the Supreme Court. Now, this is a very interesting sentence. I want to read it again. We may not be able to recover, and then through normal channels because of the corruption of the Supreme Court. Well, if it's not through normal channels, are you suggesting revolution?
Oh, no, she's probably referring to the Democrats taking control and impeaching some of the members of the court.
Right.
Can I do a commercial before you go on? I don't want to interrupt your flow.
Sure.
Mercedes. Holy cow.
What happened?
They pulled their ads from O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Because he's such an
Mercedes-Benz.
Awful person, as revealed by a New
York Times.
I
think he may be the worst person in the world, to tell you the
truth.
I think he's right up there.
The New York Times came out with an article that Fox paid millions of dollars.
Continues to pay millions.
Shut up the women who are saying he was harassing them. Meanwhile, he's on the air this whole time saying, oh, there's not a single Human Rights Department complaint against me.
Because they pay up front.
Exactly. So Mercedes pulled their ad. I hope they won't be the first. I'm saving up for my Mercedes.
They were not the first.
There was another one too,
and I just have to find out who it was.
In the meantime, I'll just say
Hyundai.
Hyundai had O'Reilly.
Hyundai.
I couldn't. All right, well, maybe I'll get a Hyundai then.
Yeah, Mercedes-Benz and Hyundai said they're withdrawing their ads.
Cool.
So two major sponsors.
Right.
Okay.
McCambridge.
So maybe that will make the Murdoch children do the right thing. They listen to economic arguments.
And as all of this says,
ignoring you, Alan.
Mercedes McCambridge. As soon as you said Mercedes, I said McCambridge.
Oh, God, we're going to start talking about puppets next.
Mercedes McCambridge is?
An actress.
Oh, I thought it was one of your mates at Fire Island or Summer
Camp.
Camp
Bronx House. Oh, Mike. All right, let's go to this story, which is, I think, interesting, which is the United Arab Emirates arranged a secret meeting in January between Blackwater founder Eric Prince and a Russian close to Vladimir Putin as part of an apparent effort to establish a back-channel line of communication between Moscow and President-elect Donald Trump. This, according to U.S., European, and Arab officials, reported in an exclusive in The Washington Post this morning. The meetings took place around January 11th, about 9 days before the Trump inauguration. They took place in islands off the Indian Ocean. Though the full agenda remains unclear, the UAE agreed to broker the meeting, in part to explore whether Russia could be persuaded to curtail its relationship with Iran, including in Syria, a Trump administration objective that would be likely to require major concessions to Moscow on U.S. sanctions.
Wow.
Well, I did want to say one thing about this that struck me is that it shows a commitment to resources that the Washington Post is providing as they follow the actions of the Trump administration. And I commend that. I mean, this is thorough investigative reporting. It required, a team of people to uncover this amazing story. But is it all that unusual that an administration might want a back channel to one of their strongest opponents, perhaps, or one of their adversaries as a way to kind of broker some behind-the-scenes deal. Doesn't that kind of happen all the time?
If it were an isolated incident, I would give that some credence, but it is one more hidden connection to Russia that has, and an administration that has denied any unusual connections with Russia. And it's the Seychelles. I mean, if you're looking for a secret place, if you're looking for a place to have a tryst, there it is. Yeah. This little island off the coast of Africa in the Indian Ocean. It definitely looks sinister. And then there's the Eric Prince connection. The guy who's picked to arrange all this is a major contributor to Trump, and also the brother of
Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education.
Also the guy who founded Blackwater, who was a defense contractor that got us into a lot of trouble in Iraq. So, again, as in everything connected to Russia, there's tons of smoke. I don't know that we've actually gotten to the campfire yet, the actual flames. But again, this looks really awful.
I'm with her. Don't look at me.
I didn't know.
It is true, though, that a lot of times, you know, Henry Kissinger kind of snuck into China and brokered that deal. And Iran-Contra, that was another behind-the-scene that backfired.
Also really good news for the United States. All right, I'll give you Kissinger, but you can't use Iran-Contra as like, oh, yeah, well, Reagan did it. It was great.
No, I'm not saying it's great. I'm saying that it's common for administrations to try to find these backdoor ways into getting messages to the other side to see if they can broker something, and maybe something might come out. It did come out good, I think.
The outcome
was good with China.
I have a question for all of you.
Yes, yes.
When do you think we're going to wake up? Is it possible?
I think it's beyond that.
Dreaming and having a bad series of nightmares, if we sort of together all force our eyelids up together right now.
We're back to November 8th. And
we would be, you know.
Con men always take advantage of people of goodwill, such as Mike, who give them the benefit of the doubt. And that is what I think Trump is doing. And it makes me very nervous. If he could say, of course that I reached out. Of course I told Flynn to talk to the Russians. Of course. But he didn't. He said, I have nothing to do with the Russians. Maybe I'll like them. Maybe I won't. No, we didn't do anything. And there's enough evidence that we have, three investigations that we know of going on to whether there was collusion between his campaign and the Russians. So you put this, you add this.
The pot.
Yeah, it's.
It may be something different. Although I think it is important to understand who Eric Prince is. He wasn't on Trump's transition team because probably the optics of that, as Betsy DeVos was being nominated for Education Secretary, and his own connections to the blemished Blackwater Company, you know, which was the contractor when the U.S. invasion of Iraq was going on.
And they shot people, right?
They shot people.
They were awful.
They did a lot of...
they weren't the army.
And may I point out that if we had the nuclear option, if it had not been weakened, you realize that before it was all important appointments like this to the district courts, to the cabinet. It all required 60 votes. And then Harry Reid weakens it. Betsy DeVos probably wouldn't be education secretary. She would not have gotten anywhere close to the vote she needed to get in. It was one vote. It was the vice president.
The vice president had to break the tie.
So we already are seeing in this episode, if nothing else, I think, the bad effects that come from a simple majority.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation, First News with Ray Graff and other stuff right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org is the address to use to send us letters. People used it. That's why we have letters just like these.
Pardon me.
It's the almonds.
Jennifer writes, donating salary to NPS, National Park Service, reinforces his message that parks management is a luxury requiring even meriting, voluntary charity, but not essential government obligation.
Ah, good point.
Stacy, and this is something that really is quite, I've thought about it a lot. Stacey can be spelled two ways. It can be spelled S-T-A-C-E-Y, or it can be spelled S-T-A-C-Y.
You think about this a lot?
Yeah, because we have a wonderful...
It has to do with Alan,
our director,
spell Alan.
Our director of engineering here is Stacey Perry Rosenberry.
Right.
Okay, and she is E-Y. So I've always thought that we should follow her lead, and all Stacey's should be E-Y's.
Okay, and now the letter writer is an E-Y?
The letter writer is an EY.
All right.
So she's what she's. Okay, she says, Mitch Hypocrite McConnell would use the nuke option if the Dems cave in this time for the next open seat. I am white, a white educated woman who teaches at a college and did not vote for President Trump.
Well, we're in the minority. I'm one of those two, but we are not our comrades.
What were the numbers? 52% of white women voted for Trump?
53%.
What do you think? And educated. What do you think that's about?
Perhaps he's, Hillary Clinton offended them.
The New York Times did a very interesting story on Trump supporters among women. And yes, hatred of Hillary it's just inexplicable.
Is it possible?
And another reason is the economy. Another reason is forgiveness of all the things that so offend me. His comments about women, his attitude towards women, his rudeness, his brutalness, all of that they just overlooked for the more important thing they think of being a successful business and who could steer the economy in the right way. As Bill Clinton used to say, it's the economy, stupid. And the vote really, really showed that's what how many people were thinking.
Well, let me give you another hypothesis. It's racism, stupid.
Yep.
And because I think the Trump campaign, not so subtly, has made it clear, although he did say, they should vote for me because they have nothing
to lose.
They have nothing to lose. But I think that the what's behind a lot of this in terms of the police department thing today, right, where they're making an agreement to go back on the
Baltimore.
And
to pull back.
And Chicago and the rest
oversight.
Of that stuff. I think it's always been a racist approach. And if you go back to the South, right, with the whole business about white women being insulted by women, terrible, terrible things, Emmett Till is terrible, terrible miscarriage of justice.
Except the woman has admitted since then that she made it up and he did not whistle
that's
at her.
My point. Yeah. That's exactly why I say miscarriage of justice. It was terrible, but it is the thing. He looked at me or he did this or did that. So I have a feeling this is some of the residue of that.
Oh, I do think that after we put in a black man, no way are we going to accept a white woman. I think that's some of the hatred towards Hillary that you saw in this election. But so many people were just willing to overlook what he said, to see in him. And you talk about this all the time, that we did that with Obama, that we put into him, into that empty vessel that was Obama, all of our hopes and thoughts. Many people did that with Trump, too.
Well, I don't think I ever said he was an empty vessel, but I did say again and again that people projected their own feelings into Obama because they didn't know him.
A flat screen, not an empty vessel. Same sort of analogy.
Yeah,
though.
Well, I just don't like it. But then I read in the paper yesterday, uh-oh, here it comes. I read in the paper yesterday that Hillary's looking at running for president again.
Oh, I don't believe that.
I think that would be a big mistake. I think it's time for her to step aside and recognize
that. Can you tell the Clintons that they're making a big mistake?
Where did you read that? What paper?
No. She's ready to come out of the woods.
It's like Trump.
Not the same as running for president. Well,
no, that's true.
She will be a voice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not running for president.
That's a good point.
She already said that she had no interest in running
again.
She can't run again, and she knows that, and her husband knows it, and it isn't going to happen. But that doesn't mean she can't be a voice in politics.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little late to run. I'm not saying we shouldn't allow people who are over 70 to have key positions in organizations.
No, but as a key...
No. I think it's actually a good idea.
All right.
But that's another argument, maybe.
I was going to say she's young. But okay, here we go. Did we do this? Yeah, we did this. I'm white educated. Okay, there you go. All right, now the next letters, if I can separate these.
Spit.
What are you two looking at each other?
I think I cut Mike off. I was wondering if you still had a point.
No, okay. I mean, the election's over. I don't know that we need to revisit this.
No, but if she decides, I was basically done in here. And now we see what a bad man Trump is, and I can run and I could win this time, and it would clear the record.
No, it's time to let the bench.
It's not going to happen.
Let the guys and the women come off the bench in the Democratic Party, and let's see them who they are, so that the Democrats.
I wish Nancy Pelosi had gone with that. Although the guy who ran against her from Ohio was just such a weak candidate, I think it would do the party good to have new faces.
Barbara. Our Barbara, I believe it's our Barbara, yes, it is our Barbara, says, if people want to find out how decent and qualified Gorsuch is, I suggest writing to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund's statement about why they absolutely oppose his appointment, as well as the statements from countless organizations that support civil voting, LGBT, and women's rights. And that's from Barbara, our Barbara. I misread the letter as usual. And qualified Gorsuch, I suggest reading the NAACP Legal Defense Fund statements, not writing. Okay. And Matt writes, fun fact, Mercedes McCambridge provided the voice for the demon that possessed Linda Blair in The Extortionist. Exorcist.
Yeah, the extortionist.
That was a different film.
That was the sequel.
That was a different film. Here you go, Joe. Throw these out.
I'll get you new ones. All right.
The extortionist. It's good. Contortionist. That worked, too, in that movie with her head spinning around.
Have you ever really seen a great contortionist?
Yes, in Bulgaria.
Well, I saw one at the Mahewi Theater in Great Barrington. When they opened it up after, you know, it had been built in the early 1900s, and they brought back the same bill.
Or off the rails, in case you hadn't noticed.
They brought back the same bill that they had the first day when they opened up as a vaudeville theater.
It was a different contortionist, I believe.
Well, it may have been, but this guy was unbelievable.
Well, you see, when they have that little box, like the suitcase, and they get into the suitcase, and you're like, well, how in the name of God do you get into the suitcase?
Hmm. Okay, if you didn't
know,
like
I wish we could take a break, but unfortunately we don't have one.
But rescue us, Joe. There must be a story, perhaps. With the Egyptian president would be good to talk about.
I was just going to go there.
Rosemary's about to give me a break.
I'm just going to read my email.
Oh, okay.
All right. So yesterday, the president of the United States met with the Egyptian president. During a meeting, he said that had much praise for the authoritarian leader and raised some eyebrows, although are we done raising eyebrows over Donald Trump and what he does now? Or are we still raising eyebrows?
But it's so clear that that's what the president wants to be. This is a man he can admire emulate.
Yeah, another authoritarian leader who he's praising.
Ever since he seized power and military takeover nearly 4 years ago, he had been barred from the White House, but President Trump made clear on Monday that that period of ostracizing him was over.
Ostracized.
And that he pledged to his support for the autocratic ruler. We agree on so many things, Mr. Trump said as he sat beside Mr. Sisi in the Oval Office. I just want to let everyone know, in case there was any doubt, that we are very much behind the president.
I figure Robert Mugabe will be there this week. That's the only one left.
Well, it's certainly another way to slap the Obama administration. Most people aren't so tuned into some of the nuances that make this so, distasteful. That the president of the United States would welcome to the White House a military leader who took over a country with force and ousted a elected official. Now, we didn't like the way that the previous president of Egypt was doing things. It was Muhammad Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood, that was the party that had taken over after Hosni Mubarak who was a ally of the United States, but he was kicked out during the Arab Spring.
Correct.
And
also a despot.
Arguably Mubarak was backed by the military, and it wasn't the same thing as a U.S. democracy, but people in Egypt are now looking back to that time and seeing it as a better time, I think.
Yeah.
So where do we go from here on that?
Well, Rosemary said it right. I mean, who's going to Robert Mugabe?
He's the only one left.
The
other big boss who hasn't been feted in our capital. Take Mugabe out for golf.
Doesn't one affect the... No, that has... We're taking China out to golf this weekend.
No, they're not going. They don't want to play golf. He hates golf.
He hates golf.
Oh, that's interesting. No,
she hates golf. In fact, closed up golf courses in China, I read, as decadent for a while. They're opened again, but as decadent,
But they are still going to Mar-a-Lago.
They're going to Mar-a-Lago.
To eat,
that's right.
Overdone steak. He eats steak well done. God.
He does?
That's one more complaint I have against him.
Who does? Trump does?
Trump.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. That's not right.
You know, he can eat his steak any way he likes. That's not a good reason not to like the president.
Why?
There are many others. Shall I name them?
Cows have faces. They have mothers. And they have babies. Why would you eat a cow? That's not right.
I'm glad they're going to Mar-a-Lago. Maybe he'll have like a meeting as he did with
the Japanese Prime Minister
out in the public, and we'll get pictures. We'll find out what's going on since the State Department and the President don't give information anymore. The wait staff can tell us what's going on.
Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead.
if you're going to save me, please let me.
No. I mean,
look, goes like at the dorm.
It does sort of, the big other topic we haven't talked about today, which is becoming a bigger topic every day, is North Korea and the militant way that the Trump administration is continually to refer to North Korea as a threat. And, there was an NBC News report that a defector out of North Korea says that Kim Jong-un wants to land a nuclear bomb somewhere like in the United States, and that's a terribly threatening thing. I don't know how serious or practical it is.
But
he said it, yeah. And, this defector said that's the case, too.
Well, but the
NBC
point
News.
Is, if somebody said something...
Yes.
You don't have an option as to whether you have to take it very seriously.
Well, you know that North Korea is on the agenda when
China
Prime Minister Xi is in Florida to meet with President Trump, and they've already said that the U.S. is going to press China to be more active, and if they don't, we'll have to act unilaterally. Which, when you hear the word unilaterally, all you can think of is our movement into Iraq, back in 2002. The whole thing is kind of scary. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the Chinese prime minister will be able to, calm President Trump down.
Well, the Chinese position, as we said yesterday, is if you guys want to solve this, you can do it. All you have to do is sit down one-on-one with the North Koreans, and the United States won't do that.
Right. And that goes back a couple of administrations.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it goes back, I think, all the way to even President Clinton, and certainly George W. Bush wouldn't. And the problem is that when they're going to be that uncivil and that mercurial, that you don't negotiate directly with them, but there's ways to
do it.
The two more stories, if we have time. One is the White House and Freedom Caucus relaunching healthcare talks. The new talks are largely being driven by the Trump administration, who are eager to leverage the president's aggressive moves against the hardline conservatives.
Scares the hell out of me, to be honest with you, because I think there's a very good chance they'll bring everybody in and they'll say, okay, we have to make a deal. We all look like fools. We're going to lose in the congressional elections. We'll lose Senate seats. And therefore, we have to put something on the board here. And you people have to worry more about your continued longevity. That's the secret message than not. So therefore, we have to come up with something. And one day we'll wake up and they will come out. Spicer will come out and say we have an agreement on a health care package, and that will be terrible because all these millions of people will lose their health care.
I'm going to disagree a little bit, because the problem is that you can get an agreement with the conservatives and you can get an agreement with the moderate Republicans, but you can't get the same agreement, and that was what foiled it in the first place.
And that was my whole point when I just said that they will appeal not to rationale or rational thought, but to political survival.
Well, Alan, if the conservatives give in a little, then for the first time, the conservatives will have given in a little. That would be good. We have no compromise.
But what
right
if
now?
The conservatives don't give in, but the so-called moderates give in?
Well, then you're going to get a bill that, let us remember, even in the form that we had it the first time, only 17% of Americans approved of. And so that could be what turns people against all Republicans. We get Democrats.
Well, especially the moderate ones in competitive districts.
Right.
Well, whatever they do, they'll make sure that the pain does not kick in until sometime in early 2019.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Kick that can down the road, right? Do we want to talk about, we didn't yesterday, I think Rosemary and I mentioned it during the break, but we didn't talk about it, which is the Los Angeles Times editorial that has been taking place over the last 2 days. They started the editorial on, basically the point is how the presidency went off the tracks. And so...
No, the president went off the tracks.
Yeah, the president went, the president went off the tracks.
And it's specifically about his dishonesty.
Yes. So they've decided to do a four-part editorial. We have part one yesterday, part two today. It's very easy to find online. I would just put in Trump editorial Los Angeles Times, mm-hmm. and it is there. What do you make of an approach of doing this over 4 days?
You know, last night on the Lawrence O'Donnell show, that's on MSNBC, they had the editorial page editor from the LA Times speaking, and I think that was a huge mistake. This is a balding white man with one of those mouths that has no expression, just a straight line across,
sort of
like a cartoon. Yeah, and he was smug.
That is funny.
He was, and he was smug and completely unsympathetic, saying, "Well, we just felt this was necessary and people should read it." It turned me off immediately. I think this is a case where they have taken a bold stand, and it's controversial. It could hurt journalism. It could work to Trump's benefit. And they need to be out there saying this is an extraordinary time. We've done something not done before. Here's why we did it. Here's how we did it. And they did not. They are not selling it. The big old problem always with the news industry, we just take this smug position that we have the power and therefore we're using it.
I would actually like to hear from both of you as newspaper people because in the old days, editorials, they were elitist sort of thing.
They still are.
Yeah. Well, but some are trying to make them more accessible. And I'm wondering whether or not, because people don't always follow editorials in newspapers, that whether there's a way to do that.
Well, they're certainly going out on a limb here. We're talking about it here in Albany, New York, so they did get our attention.
Yeah,
you're right. Only a limited number of people read the editorial page, and trying to broaden the influence of the editorial page so that it reaches more people and is to get it repeated. So making appearances on TV shows where they're talking about the editorial.
With or without lips.
You don't have to... there's always the risk that you'll go beyond what was in the editorial. But the point is, there are legitimate questions about Trump's presidency and where it's headed. Today's is something like, is he pushing for an imperial presidency? It's something we talked about when we talked about President Trump's admiration of the president of Egypt.
Sisi.
And President Sisi from Egypt. And, these are legitimate questions. There are some others that are raising the question about Trump's own mental capacity, if whether he's exhibiting signs that he's not in full control of his faculties. And then you talk about the method that a very small number of people in his cabinet and the vice president could step in and remove him from power. And that's scary. I mean, that's frightening to me. Mm-hmm.
And it ain't going to happen either.
Well, I think it would not be accepted by the American public. And if you think the country's divided now, I think that would divide.
And everybody should go out and read the 25th Amendment right now. Look it up on your Google.
Right, right. And that, speaks to presidential secession. Wasn't that brought in after Eisenhower had a heart attack while he was president, in capacity to run the nation?
Really, Woodrow Wilson, it wasn't brought in after Wilson, but Wilson was the prime case because his wife would come out and say, "This is what the president wants you to do." And, of course, he wasn't telling anybody what to do.
Yeah. We are out of time. I want to thank you all, and we will continue. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. More roundtable after this.